This is WPKN in Bridgeport, 89.5 FM, WPKN.org. My name is Scott Harris. This program, Counterpoint, comes to you every Monday between 8 and 10 p.m. And we continue now with Talat Hamdani. She's with a group, 9/11 Families for Peaceful Tomorrows, whose son Salman, a New York City police cadet, died attempting to save lives at the World Trade Center on September 11, 2001. Talat, thanks so much for being here with us tonight.
Thank you for having me, Scott.
Talat, tell our listeners about the group that you're working with actively, 9/11 Families for Peaceful Tomorrows. We've had a number of representatives of the group on our program over the years. Tell the listeners, it's certainly a bit different than many of the other 9/11 groups we see in the media.
Yes, it is a non-political, number one, non-political organization, and it is formed by 9/11 victims' family members, and their mission statement is to channelize our energies, you know, and our losses and our grief into positive energy, to do something constructive and positive for humanity at large.
And tell us about your son, Mohammed Salman Hamdani. He was a police cadet. I think he was an EMT as well. But tell our listeners about him, who he was, and how he met his fate at the World Trade Center.
Yes, Salman was my firstborn child, and he was a certified paramedic. He worked 1 year with MetroCare on the ambulance, and he was also, this was his third year, his final year as a cadet with the NYPD. And he wanted to become a medical doctor, which seems to be the profession in my family. He had applied to many schools, and as part of the program to apply for medical schools, he signed up for the cadet program, he did the EMT program, he did the study abroad program. So that day, he had graduated that June from Queens College. He did his undergrad in chemistry major. And it was a very, you know, happy year for all of us because all three of my boys graduated, you know, one from high school, one from college, and Salman from college also. So this was he had picked up a job as a DNA lab analyst at Howard Hughes Medical Institute in Manhattan. And at the funeral, we were told that this was his first year of the MD-PhD program. So he lived at home with us, and he used to leave between 8:15 and 8:30 to go into Manhattan, and he would take the train, the subway. And he did not come home that day, and knowing who he was as a child, he used to bring home, you know, sick birds and nourish them and nurture them and send them back. He was a very compassionate, humble, very humble, kind soul. And I would tell everybody, we can see other people's pain, but he could feel their pain. That's why he just had to help whomever he saw in pain. And he did not come home that day, and we were not worried because we knew he would go down there. No matter what part of the state he was in, he would have gone down there to help. However, when we investigated, you know, and went to his office, and they said he did not report to duty that day, that was a little bit disturbing. And the next day when the phone lines came up and everybody called in, and his call did not come in, that was, you know, very disturbing. So my husband and I, we went to his office and to retrieve his cell phone. He had forgotten his cell phone on the job the day before. And then from there we went down to the St. Vincent's Hospital to register his name. Not to register his name, but to look at the list that were coming out by every 2 hours of the dead and the injured people, to check his name against all those records. So we did that all day of the second day to no avail. And it was a sense of relief that he was neither injured and nor among the dead, more so that he was not among the dead. And then for the next 10 days, we searched for him in Manhattan by the World Trade Center. We made up a flyer, and we did, of course, like many others, we put up the flyers everywhere, and we searched for him. And we registered him missing at the armory, because after the third day, it was very it was sure that, of course, he is something very bad happened to him. And after 10, 12 days, you know, we figured out that there's no one, nothing is going, there's no way that we could search him over there in that rubble. And we were not allowed to go near that Twin Towers either. We were just cut off at Church Street. And then there was this news circulating that many, you know, Muslim Americans were detained between the ages of 17 and 35. So our hope was that maybe he was detained. But before this news came, we went searching for him at all the different hospitals, you know, not only in the state but also in New Jersey, just with the hope that maybe, you know, he's somewhere where he cannot identify himself.
I hear you. So this was a very, you must have been under such stress and as
it
you,
was, yeah, it was. Yeah. And then after 2 more weeks passed, and we planned to go to Mecca to pray for his safe return. And the New York Post published a headline, "Is he's missing or hiding?" And that was sensationalized, you know, that just put things in a very different perspective. The other newspapers, the New York Times, Daily News, and Newsday, they were very fair, and they reported that the family has gone to pray for the safe return of their son. But New York Post did not do that, and also there were implications that he was seen on the day of 9/11 at the Midtown Tunnel in Manhattan. And that just threw things into a very different scenario, and we ended up defending, you know, we just ended up defending ourselves. There were, you know, numerous phone calls. The detectives came to our house asking for his computer and everything else. And then when we came back from Mecca, there was a message from our Congressman Ackerman's office that I have news about your son, so we contacted his office. And then he interrogated us. It was short and brief, maybe over a span of maybe 1 week. And he clarified everything. But he did interrogate us, and he made us believe that maybe he was detained by the INS or by the ICE. And he made us write a letter to Ashcroft asking him to give us information about our son. So we were basically led to believe that he was detained by the congressman of the United States. What am I to do then? Not believe him?
Mm.
So the hope was there that, okay, he's not killed. And we checked the New York Times every day. They printed the names of the people that had died or were confirmed dead by the medical examiner's office. And I remember my boys asking me, he's not there, right, Mama? You know, we call Bhaijan, his name is not there. I said, no, his name is not amongst the dead. So there was that hope that he's alive. And then on March 20th, two officers came to our house at 11:30 p.m. and confirmed that he was indeed, his remains were found at the Twin Tower, the North Tower. And then we went down to the medical examiner's office the next day, and we had no option. The medical examiner, I said, I would like to have someone do my own DNA testing. And he said, you know, whoever does it will have to come here and do it in front of us. And the medical examiner said, you know, you have two options, Mrs. Hamdani. You take the remains and the death certificate and do whatever you want. Otherwise, we'll just hold him, and whenever you're ready, you can have his remains. So we had no option but to just, you know, accept it. And we did. And we gave him, his funeral was very nice. He was a very humble person. After, I think, his seventh or eighth birthday, he would not let me celebrate anything. And he always said, Mama, no, I'll tell you when to celebrate, even when he did his graduation. And then in 99, someone from the extended family who happened to be a lieutenant died and he went under the American flag. And he said, Mama, that's honor and that's how I want to go. And that's how he went.
This is such a wrenching story, given the kind of drama that's playing out here with this controversy over the mosque and knowing the pain that all 9/11 victims' families went through. Yours seems to have been magnified by many times more, with all the implications of guilt and all that. That was must have been very difficult to get through.
It was, you know, but I had to do it. I had to clear his name. If I hadn't spoken up, he would have gone down, you know, in history as a, you know, implication that maybe he was definitely associated. And he was working for the NYPD. This was his third year.
Mm-hmm.
And the fear was so intense. I have not family members, but people I know over a long period of time, like for 20 years, 25 years, I asked them, when this flyer was circulating in the NYPD, it was an NYPD flyer with Salman's picture and the registration that they have and they go into the system. And it said, wanted on top, and said, chemistry major, has police ID. If you know him, step forward. If you see him somewhere, come forward. And I asked those people, few of them, did you step up and say that, you know this guy, he is not a terrorist, you know, I know him. And they said no. And their answer was, oh, there was no need because we knew he was not a bad person. No, you were afraid to own up at the time that you knew him.
Mm-hmm. Well, that fear and that hate and all that just seems to continue on here. We're speaking with Talat Hamdani of the group 9/11 Families for Peaceful Tomorrows, and she was telling us about her son, Salman, a New York City police cadet and EMT who died attempting to save other people's lives at the World Trade Center on 9/11, but who himself was his patriotism and his innocence questioned during the period that he was missing before his remains were found, as his mother just described. Talat, what is your reaction to this controversy over the mosque, just a couple of blocks from what many people are claiming is hallowed ground where so many thousands died on 9/11?
I understand, you know, many people died. 3,000, 2,700 died. And some of them were Muslims. They were people of all faith, all ethnicities, and even different nations also, who were not American citizens, and they died over there. And there were many other Muslims, you know, South Asians who died, who were not even reported missing because maybe they were not legal, and maybe no one knows, the cab drivers and all those other, you know, bystanders. But to say that it's hallowed ground, yes, it is hallowed ground. But this cultural center, the Muslim cultural center, is not being built on the footprints. There are a few churches over there. The Trinity Church is on the footprint of the Twin Towers. There's a synagogue over there. I have no objection to any place of worship or faith. But for them to object, the protesters, whoever they are, for them to say that it is a sensitive issue. Yes, it's sensitive, but what about the sensitivities of all of the people who are being targeted as painted by a broad brush as all Muslims are terrorists? And to me, it is an issue of my fundamental right, freedom of religion. The people that were murdered that day by Al-Qaeda were not murdered because of their faith or race or ethnicity. They were murdered because they were Americans and they believed in the American values. American values of liberty, democracy, freedom of faith, pursuing your own faith. And now to and not to honor those values, right? No, it's not. I don't think it is appropriate. It's a disgrace if you don't hold on to those values for which all those people died that day.
Talat, what is your response to people who talk about the presence of a mosque being very hurtful, that it reopens old wounds, that it's too close to the hallowed ground where your own son died? How do you respond to the idea that somehow the entire Islamic faith is responsible for 9/11?
Yes, it's a case of collective guilt, which is not right. But then if you look at the history, look at our history, We have done that over the past years. You know, there was a time when the Catholics were not allowed to, you know, pray in Georgia. The Mormons were thrown out, you know. So it's something, I call it initiation into the American system that we need to prove. But I think, you know, this has gone too far, and it has been complicated. It has been, you know, made complex by the people who, on politicians, I think on both sides, I have to say now, who are exploiting this issue to benefit their own selfish goals of, you know, agendas to win the political elections. And it is, you know, it's, to me, it is very wrong. It's cruel. It's unethical. Our blood has been shed, and to exploit such a big tragedy for your own selfish goals. I mean, Senator Harry Reid came out and said, you know, they should move from there, and, you know, other people came out. If you cannot defend the Constitution, I'd say, then you need not be in the Congress, whether Senate or, you know, a congressperson, then you should not be there. Then resign and let someone else get into that seat so they can defend the Constitution. Because to me, it is about the whole community, you know. There's a division. Our country has been divided along the lines of faith now, which is not good. We need to heal. We need to come together and heal. And the best way to heal is to have this cultural center whose objective is to reconcile and build bridges. It's not just a mosque. The mosque is a prayer room on the top floor. The rest is a 500-seated auditorium. There's a culinary school in there. There is a gym in there. There is a swimming pool in there. There are after-school programs over there. It's for the community. The community does not have any objection. The community board one gave its permission to, the zoning is fine. They gave its permission to move forward. So these are people who are coming from outside of Manhattan. They are not of the local, you know, area at all, who are objecting to it.
Talat, you talk about a political agenda at work here, and it seems certainly that you have many Republicans and conservative politicians who are trying to score political points by bringing this whole mosque controversy to the fore just a couple of months before an election. It's interesting that this building actually has been used as a prayer center for most of 2009, as I understand it. And there's a mosque in the Pentagon itself that was established there after 9/11 when the Pentagon itself was hit. Certainly what many people might consider hallowed ground, the same as World Trade Center.
This whole there's this big movement called Stop Islamization. It is a European movement which has now come to America. And for them to say that they are going to impose Sharia law, we cannot change, you know, and make an amendment in the Bill of Rights. And you expect to believe that they will change the whole Constitution? They must be hallucinating. It's the fear factor that they are using and exploiting the ignorance of, you know, majority of the people.
I think you've clearly stated the issue right there. There's a lot of ignorance and fear that politicians are playing into. And I could just quote, I mean, most of this comes from Fox News commentators. For instance, Dick Morris, a former Clinton presidential advisor, he actually called this proposed Islamic Community Center a command center for terrorism. Newt Gingrich, as we spoke about in an earlier interview, said he compared this establishment of a Islamic center there in New York City as if the Nazis were going to put up a sign next to the Holocaust Museum in Washington. And Sean Hannity, as you just mentioned, is one of the people who's talking about the imam of this particular mosque, whose goal is to shred our Constitution and install Sharia law. Lies and damn lies and just spewing of hate is what I hear. And I'm not of the Muslim faith, but I can imagine how hurtful it is to you and angrifying. I'd like to hear your emotional reaction to all this. I can't imagine what I'd be feeling if I were in your shoes, not only being a Muslim, but also having lost your son in 9/11 at the World Trade Center site.
It is definitely, you know, I mean, that's why I've been speaking up so much now. wrong to, you know, just say all the Muslims are terrorists. My argument is, if the actions of a few make the rest of the people, you know, guilty, then nobody will be innocent, you know. The whole world is guilty of something or the other. I mean, we have our Timothy McVeighs and David Koresh, and, you know, there was the Irish, you know, Irish people, you know. So, coming back to what's happening right now, it is, what I experienced 9 years ago as a mother, now the whole nation is experiencing it as a nation. And I am glad the issue is on the table. It's being debated. And it is a very strong anti-Muslim movement, which is, it's dangerous now. We are walking, treading very, very dangerous waters, because the way these people are spewing venom and hatred. I mean, I met a few people who went to that demonstration yesterday, and they said it was, you know, about, I mean, I saw it on television also, that there was this African-American guy who went to support them, but because they thought he was a Muslim, they came after him. So we have put everybody under suspicion by virtue of this collective guilt. And if what the people do not seem to realize right now, today it's their faith, you know, but like the Muslim faith, but tomorrow it will be, it could be another faith.
Right.
And this is very dangerous. They have to understand that. Now, all along, nationally, there are like 10 states where mosques permissions have been forbidden after having been granted, after this movement started. They have forbidden it, and there's a mosque in there's a church in Florida, Jacksonville, Florida, who says on the 11th of the anniversary, on the 9th anniversary, they're going to burn the Quran. And they are having a big demonstration in the city in New York, and they are going to have caravans of people coming in. A demonstration on that solemn day when so many people died, my son being one of them, they're coming here to demonstrate against a cultural center. They have to accept it. We are not guilty because someone attacked in the name of Islam. Al-Qaeda attacked us, and we lost our people too. I lost my son too, and now to being targeted and scapegoated? No, I will not accept it. And to me, this is not an issue of a mosque. It is the issue of religious freedom.
Well said, Talat Hamdani. Before we go, I have to ask you this question. Are you in favor of dialogue with the opponents of this Islamic center being built two blocks from Ground Zero? Would you like to sit down with these people face-to-face, or do you think that any negotiation would be some kind of invitation to persecution?
What is there to negotiate, Scott? What am I going to negotiate? My son died. He was a Muslim. I'm a Muslim. I am, you know, so what is there to negotiate? The cultural center is legal, legitimate, you know, it's being built on private property with proper zoning. Because the sentiment of 60% of people do not agree with it, doesn't mean that we have to relinquish our rights. Why do we have to relinquish our rights? If they don't like the cultural center, they don't have to go there. You don't have to visit it. Nobody wants you, asking you to go there and force you to go there. You go to your own churches and synagogues or your temples, wherever you want to go to pray. But to deny a faith to have their religious place over there, which is more of a, you know, like a YMCA is going to be an MCC, like a JCC is going to be an MCC, Muslim Cultural Center, and the objective is to build bridges. Imam is on a state visit. He is our emissary to the Middle East since President Bush's time.
Right, right.
And to demonize him, you know, I mean, they're demonizing President Obama. That he is a Muslim, as though it is a crime to be a Muslim. The White House had to come out and make a categorically statement that, no, he's a Christian. I don't think that was necessary.
It's a scary time in this country, and especially...
Very scary.
And you would think that after 9 years have passed since 9/11, things would maybe healing. Things would be getting less hateful and tense, and the incidence of scapegoating would diminish, but it doesn't seem that that's the case.
Not at all, but hopefully after this debate is over, you know, once the elections are over, it will, you know, simmer down. And hopefully we'll move forward united and heal this nation, you know, towards reconciliation and peace through mercy and, you know, mutual talk. I mean, yes, I heard, you know, the imam's wife come on, I think, CNN with Christian Amanpour, and she said she's willing to talk. I mean, that is the builder's problem and their problem. I have nothing to do with it. Whether it gets constructed or not, you know, it's not my project. I have nothing to do with it. To me, it's asking give up my rights as an American, and I don't think I am willing to do that. I will never be willing to do that, and that is my right, and that's why I'm fighting for.
I hear you clearly that in a case like this, you feel people in general have to stand their ground, not for the Islamic center so much, but for the tenets of the U.S. Constitution and what this country's founded on, which is religious freedom and tolerance.
Yes.
Talat, thank you for being here and sharing your story with us and your feelings on this unfortunate controversy. I appreciate you being here and wearing it on your sleeve here as you have tonight.
Thank you for having me. And if I may just address the audience to please go and sign up and become members to support September 11th, 9/11 Families for Peaceful Tomorrows at www.peacefultomorrows.org. It would help us, give us more, you know, membership to fight for this cause, which is for all American. It's an American cause.
So peacefultomorrows.org is the website.
Yes, please.
And there's lots of good contact information, and people can support that organization, which is certainly worthy of that support. Talat, thanks again, and I hope we can speak to you again about this, and well, hopefully some more constructive issues that we can touch on in
the
future.
You.
Take care, and thanks again for all you do.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Take care, Talat. Bye-bye. That was Talat Hamdani of the group 9/11 Families for Peaceful Tomorrows, whose son Salman, a New York City police cadet and EMT, died attempting to save lives at the World Trade Center on 9/11. This is WPKN in Bridgeport, 89.5 FM in Bridgeport, and we can be found on the internet at WPKN.org.